Monster Man, episode 264, Vagabond and Vargui. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're beginning our journey through the V chapter of Monster Manual 2, the 1983 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. And our first monster for today is a very unusual one, and that is the Vagabond. Now, obviously the term vagabond, which literally just means someone who wanders from place to place, could be applied to a wide range of things in Dungeons & Dragons, not least among them player characters, who are often sort of wandering rascals. In this case, it's more of a kind of alien creature, and I was wondering if this was based on any one specific science fiction source, because this is a relatively common trope. Like, there are a lot of stories that are a little bit like this. It's a little bit like the way the Beyonder behaves in Secret Wars 2, although I think that that's too late for this story. It's sometime in the mid-80s, Secret Wars 2, I want to say. But also, the Vagabond isn't sort of all-powerful like some of these things are, but there are a lot of, like, stories in which an alien being comes to Earth and attempts to pass itself off as a human, but not very well. From The Man Who Fell to Earth to Mork and Mindy to whatever, right? So that is what the Vagabond is. The Vagabond is a shape-changing alien being. And when I started reading this, I was like, oh, it's like The Thing. But no, the Vagabond is actually pretty friendly. So it comes, you know, from wherever it comes from. It lands on Earth. It shapeshifts into a human or an elf or what have you. And it tries to learn more about corporeal existence. And because it has no background, you know, no way of understanding the life around it, it's weird and alien and inquisitive. But if the player characters befriend it, it will help out. Like, it will come along and tag along on an adventure. And at the end of the quest, it'll basically just say, well, I've learned so much. Thank you, my friends, for helping me understand human life. Here are some enchanted gems as a memento of our time together. Now I must return to the stars and my people. Bzoosh! That's kind of fun, and it also is fun, like, you can imagine the many challenges that would come from having an alien intelligence that, you know, it's not that it's not bright, but it just doesn't know very much about how to get along as a person. So that would be a creature that could really struggle in a wide variety of different situations, and you can see how there would be a lot of fun in the characters kind of having to deal with its well-meaning but ill-informed shenanigans. I also like the idea that because vagabonds are a bit naive, you can imagine that they would be easy for some bad guy to manipulate. I know I keep coming back to kind of comic book analogies. It's just quite a comic booky concept, I suppose. But, or maybe it's just on my mind at the moment. Last episode had some comic analogies as well, so who knows. But a bit like Dr. Doom was sort of able to do with the Silver Surfer in that one where Dr. Doom stole the power cosmic from the Silver Surfer. But the Silver Surfer comes to Earth and it doesn't really know anything about people. So it's easy for someone like Dr. Doom to trick him because everything that Dr. Doom does rings warning bells for a normal person, right? Oh, are you an iron-masked tyrant? You know, with a castle full of goons who say things like, no, sire, not the ultimate sanction. Yeah, but the Silver Surfer doesn't understand that any of that is weird because he's an alien. So Doom is able to trick him into a situation where he can steal the power cosmic. So I like the Vagabond, and I like the many awkward situations that having to apologize for your strangely acting friend could get into your D&D game. So if you want to get some of that, like, Earth Girls Are Easy, fish out of water space comedy into your D&D game, then I feel like the Vagabond is actually a pretty reasonable choice. Next up, we have the Vargui. This is such a kind of core monster concept that I was really surprised to find out that, as far as I can tell, it is not specifically based on a piece of folklore. Now, obviously, it resembles a wide variety of different folkloric monsters because there is a pretty common folkloric trope of heads flying around by themselves. I have read many sources on the internet which claim that the Vargui is based on the Penangalan, the creature that consists of the head and entrails of someone. You know, they lift off the body and you're like, oh, it wasn't a person, it was a Penangalan. And we've seen similar flying head motifs. The Rokorokubi would be one example, or the other Rokurokubi, the Nukakubi, is that right? Anyway, there's one that has a really long neck, and there's one where the head separates and flies around. And another example would be the Burbalang. But it's hard to see that the Vargui is based on the Pananggalan, because of course there is already a Pananggalan in Dungeons & Dragons. Like, if you want a Pananggalan in D&D, there's Pananggalans right here. Also, the Vargui doesn't seem to have the all-important feature of all these other monsters, that this flying head is somebody's head. You know, it's not walking around most of the time, and then at night the head separates and goes off to wreak evil. As far as I can tell, it just kind of flies around. Being of the generation that I am of, what the Vargui really reminds me of are the kind of flying Medusa heads in the old Nintendo game Castlevania. Are they in Castlevania, or are they in Castlevania 2? I don't know. Anyway, you know, it is quite possible that the flying Medusa heads in Castlevania, which comes out in 1986, are directly inspired by the Vargui. We've already seen a number of other D&D monsters turn up in various video games, like the Utyug in Final Fantasy, or the Sahuagin in Final Fantasy, for that matter. And when we're looking for those, I feel like we have a tendency to look only in RPGs, but there's no reason that they wouldn't turn up in other genres as well. There's an old platformer on the Mega Drive, or the Genesis in the US, that included art from Peterson's Field Guide to Creatures of the Cthulhu Mythos. Now, one of the unusual features of the Vargui, I haven't seen this very often, is that if it bites you, its poisonous bite affects, and not only does it, like, reduce your hit points, but it actually reduces your maximum hit points. And they cannot be restored by anything short of a wish. So, that's pretty big. There are quite a lot of monsters in 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons which do damage to your hit point maximum. And firstly, these are rather easier to restore than a wish, or there are a number of spells that can cure this affliction. And the second is that I always assumed this was something that later editions inserted to remove level drain. Level drain, one of the most hated features of undead monsters in earlier editions of Dungeons & Dragons, not only is it a deeply unpopular mechanic, but also I think as the game goes on and on through its various editions, level drain becomes extremely complex. Like, so I play not one of the most complicated character classes in 5th edition, but if you hit my level 8 ranger with, I don't know, 2 or 3 levels of level drain and force him to go back to level 5 or 6, I would actually have to go and hunt through the rulebook and figure out what are the abilities that I got at those levels and then remove them, and all my skill totals would change maybe, because maybe my proficiency bonus would change, and it would just be a whole huge hassle. You see that in earlier editions of D&D wouldn't be as complicated. Obviously this is for AD&D, but like if you're playing BX and you lose a couple levels, it doesn't actually change all that much. Spells, I guess, would be the big thing. So I always thought that hit point max reduction was a simple fix for one of the most obvious effects of level drain, which is that it reduces not only your hit points, but your maximum number of hit points. But here we can see that actually this is a mechanic that exists alongside level drain. That's just kind of a curiosity. The Vargui is pretty good. I have a hard time thinking of the circumstances under which I would use it in preference to the Pananggalan or the Burbalang, except maybe if I was trying to give a more, like, explicitly demonic feel. Pananggalans and Burbalangs and Nukakubis and whatever have this kind of folk horror thing to them. You can really see this in that Hellboy story where he fights the Nukakubi, because the Nukakubi's not really that threatening to a big, tough fantasy horror adventurer guy, whereas if you were like a simple traveler on a lonely road late at night, the Nukakubi would scare the wits out of you. Whereas the Vargui is more like aggressive than those other creatures, and I think, you know, fits a little more easily into a fight scene rather than a horror story. So I suppose under those circumstances, you know, you when you throw a Vargui into a big fight and you're just like, yeah, and then a bunch of Varguis come flapping in, you're not taking away its core thing. Because when you think about those other head monsters, the question is, who is the Pananggalan, right? Whereas here it's just, uh-oh, don't let it bite you. So I think the Vargui is pretty good. It's quite dangerous, and you can absolutely understand why player characters would hate it. Not being able to get those hit points back short of a wish is pretty demanding. And it has quite an effective visual presentation. I like the illustration, which shows it with this real expression of ferocious hatred as it comes flying kind of toward the reader. It's interesting because just a few episodes ago, I was complaining about the lack of, like, action shots in the Monster Manual 2, and here, the more or less standard Monster Manual 2 portrait has been framed as more of an action shot, and I think it's really effective. Okay, that's about all the monsters that we have time for today. In our next episode, we're going to be continuing our journey through the V section of Monster Manual 2, so please join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.